Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another live session of the third annual Fundraising Success Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success. I'm pleased to welcome you to Promoting a Culture of Philanthropy, sponsored by DonorPerfect Fundraising Software. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live session. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, and you can send them in at any time. Make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets on the console. And to figure out what all those widgets do, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from the console. Also, as you probably know, each of the sessions in today's conference are eligible for CFRE credits. The tracker document required to apply for CFRE credit for the session can be downloaded via the resource widget on the console. Lastly, if you leave the session at any time or you'd like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the FSV on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning October 15, 2012. So let's get into our session. Please welcome Richard Perry and Jeff Schreifels, founding partner and senior partner, respectively, at Veritas Group. As I'm sure you know, it's no longer good enough to simply ask for money. Nonprofits have to engage donors fully. And in order to do that, they have to operate from an organization-wide place of passion and compassion. And that's what Jeff and Richard are here to discuss today. So, guys, take it away.
All right. Well, thank you, Margaret.
Thank you, Margaret.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's good to be with you. Although it's virtual, we still feel your presence. So we're looking to have a good time here. We want to talk about promoting a culture of philanthropy, and let's get into it. All right, let's first talk about what we're going to discuss. Hit that thing.
I think we've lost Richard.
Okay, here I am.
Okay, all right. Great.
Here we go. Sorry.
Sorry about that.
Hey, technology, here we go. All right, so let's talk about our agenda today. What's for discussion? First of all, we're going to talk about why is this so important. Then we're going to look at, well, what does a culture of philanthropy look like in an organization? Then we're going to talk about including the donor as part of the mission, the role of leadership and what they play in developing this culture, telling your story, making sure that everyone is involved in it, and then give you some practical ways to promote a culture of philanthropy in your organization. And then we'll have a little time for questions, and hopefully we can answer those questions. But let's talk a little bit about why we think this is important. First of all, Richard and I really believe that without a positive culture of philanthropy, a nonprofit will not survive over the next decade. We really believe that. Donors have changed. We've all talked about how donors have become, it used to be out of obligation that donors gave. And those donors are dying away. Donors today demand to see impact. They want to see that they're making a difference. And just like in the for-profit world, see, the for-profit world has figured this out. Good for-profit companies understand that it's all about their customers and their product. And when they get that right, they shine. If you look at the top 100 companies today and you look at the reason why they've grown and why they've done well in the market, it's because they focused on customers and really providing them a great product. And we need to do the same thing in the nonprofit world. We really believe that today's donors want to experience and make an impact on the world. And if your organization doesn't show them how, they're going to look elsewhere. So what experience are you going to give them? So what does it look like? So just visualize with me on what your organization would look like if it really had a true culture of philanthropy. Number one, Your mission would include your donors. Your donors are not just a means to an end. They are part and parcel of what your mission is. Leadership and staff see the donors as essential in really carrying out the work, and they understand that it brings joy to donors. Now, let me explain that. Most nonprofits do a pretty good job of talking about and understanding their donors as that they are essential to making sure that the mission gets carried out, but they don't understand that it actually brings joy to a donor's life for them to give. And when you can come from that place, things change. Number three, the board is your biggest cheerleader. In a real culture of philanthropy, your board is out there being your biggest cheerleader and advocate. Program and development work together. They work to help each other out. Donors trust your organization. Everyone knows the story, and we'll talk more about what that means. But everyone in the organization, from the board, the president, the staff, to your donors, understands what your story is. You're not afraid to talk about the need. This is a big issue. If you have a true culture of philanthropy, you're not going to be afraid to talk about the need that you have. And then finally, when a donor walks through the door, what they feel, whether it's a virtual door or the real door, what they feel is righteous, what they feel is love, righteous anger, grace, hard work, personal care, and then more love. Let's talk about the donor's mission first. First of all, are your donors in your mission statement? You know, when I've talked about this before, people are like, what are you talking about? Of course donors are not part of our mission statement. That's not about who we are. And I question them. I say, well, then what are your donors to your organization? We really believe if your donors were part of your mission statement, everyone in that organization would treat donors differently. Now, that might be a far cry for some of you to actually do. But even if it's not written in your mission statement, is it a part of who you are?
And on that point, this whole thing about having donors in your mission statement is so crucial, because donors, I mean, this is an obvious statement, donors are where money comes from, but we actually don't behave that way in most organizations. And so we forget that that's where the money comes from, and so therefore they are relegated to a kind of a room in the basement of the house.
Right. Next, your organization is the bridge between the world's needs and the donor's desire to change the world. If you can really see as the organization, that's what you are. You are really the bridge between your mission, the need, and your donor's desire. And if you can look at yourself that way, that kind of changes your perspective of what donors are. It's all about the impact, not ratios. Donors want to know about the impact that you're making, and they want to know that they are making an impact. We're so focused on ratios, making sure our costs are aligned, and that's important. But when that's our only focus, we then lose sight of what today's donors really want, and that is to see impact.
In fact, on that ratios bit, we're actually in the process of organizing some top financial people, both in the commercial world as well as the nonprofit world and the auditing world, to actually look at that in a real way. And what I mean by real way is, what does it actually take to run an organization? And we, Jeff and I, believe that the paradigm that we've been operating on for the last 30, 40 years is actually one that's outdated. But that's very controversial, but you'll hear more of us in the marketplace on that point.
Next, half of your time, energy, and resources should be devoted to donors. Now, when I say that to folks, they just, like, shake their heads. Are you kidding me? Half of our time? But if you think about it, if your donors are part of your mission, you have a responsibility to care for them as well as the need that you're addressing. So that's a real challenge we like to put out to organizations, because we see a lot of time spent on the need that they're addressing, little time on donors. Donors are always top of mind. What we mean by that is, when we make decisions as an organization, we're always thinking about how does a donor think about that? Would a donor support it? Would they support the decisions that we're trying to make? It's not just about us around the room. It's about everyone included. And donors really have a seat at the table. We invite them to come and sit at our meetings. Obviously they're in board meetings, but beyond the board meetings, we want to know their ideas and value that.
And in fact, that the whole thing about having a donor sit at the table is kind of scary because, first of all, if they're at the table, they might see our dirty laundry. Secondly, we might not agree. And so those are all things that cause a knot in your stomach. I was in a meeting yesterday in New Jersey at a major nonprofit where we had donors at the table. And they said some outrageous things. But after we sit and talk and reason together, they actually are reasonable people and they can actually participate in an inclusive kind of discussion.
Next, we boldly ask. You know, if our donors are part of our mission, we're not afraid to ask our donors to help us financially or to volunteer or whatever. But we can boldly go in front of them and ask and feel good about that, one, because we know it's going to do great things, and secondly, we know it's going to do wonderful things for them in their life. So donors as part of our mission also means we're boldly asking our donors. And everyone in the organization has a relationship with donors. It's not just regulated to the president, the CEO, the development director, and the development team. Everyone in your organization should have access to donors and be part of what the donor experience.
If you really want to get people inside your organization to understand where money comes from, it's pretty interesting to have a finance guy sit with a donor or a program person or a woman that works in IT or whatever, or HR. This is the reality. These are the people that are actually driving the entire economic side of the organization and probably the spiritual side of the organization as well.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, donors are celebrated. You know, when we have staff meetings at organizations and we're celebrating either a milestone or something that's great that has happened with our mission, we also need to take time to celebrate what our donors are doing. And when that happens, a culture within the organization starts to focus around donors as well as the need that you're addressing. So we need to celebrate our donors. Let's then move to talking about the role of leadership. And this is a big deal because Richard and I have been in so many different meetings with organizations where they're all lamenting the fact that leadership just doesn't get it. They're talking about how do we get this donor who we know has capacity and loves our organization, but he wants access to our president and talk to them in order to make a big gift. How do we move around that and try to get the gift without their leader? And it's impossible. And we have a leader here who's not interested for whatever reason to get involved in fundraising because they don't view it as a high calling or whatever. We run into this all the time where leadership is not taking an active role.
Well, and sometimes it's not about not being interested. Sometimes they're afraid because the whole unless you really understand how fundraising works and that it's actually not taking money from somebody but actually helping the donor do what they want to do. If you don't understand that, then you have a paradigm of taking money from somebody, and that's scary, so therefore I don't want to do that. That's why they don't do it. Plus a number of other reasons.
Yeah. So a leader has to embrace the concept that donors are a crucial part of its mission. Absolutely. A leader has to be passionate about its role in philanthropy. You cannot have a leader that is not passionate about philanthropy and fundraising. If you don't, it's just not going to work. Leadership welcomes asking donors for gifts and inviting those donors to talk to their sphere of influence into relationship with the organization. This is huge. If they don't do this, you're going to run into continued problems. You know, you're going to have people who shouldn't be asking donors for gifts when they want to have access to leadership, and leadership is not going to do it.
On this point, it's really interesting, the whole role of leadership as it relates to fund development, because in the commercial world, a company would never hire a CEO or a top person that wasn't actually passionate about either the product, so that's program, or the sales and marketing function. In fact, we were in another meeting recently where we were talking with CEOs about that. If you really don't care about sales and marketing, you're not going to be in a leadership position in a commercial company, because that's one of the three the feet of the stool to make the, you know, its product, resource, and making it happen.
Next, board members. So board is part of your leadership. First of all board members need to give financially to the organization. And I don't care if it's $10 or $10 million, every one of the board should be giving financially if to be part of that board. It's not only crucial just because they need to give, but it's also, if you're going to be getting foundation grants and such, they want to know that they have 100% participation from the board. So leaders in the board need to be giving financially. And then also, when you're recruiting a CEO or president, one of the prerequisites has to be that they embrace this culture of philanthropy, that they can fundraise, that they feel comfortable being in front of donors, that they support what fundraising and the development program is doing. If they don't do that, you're going to be in a world of hurt.
You're going to be dead.
The second part is then in recruiting board members, so the CEO recruiting board members, it's paramount that they prospect, that their prospect is passionate about giving as well, and that they will want to invite others into the mission of the organization. So how it works is, you know, you've got a board now full of people who are passionate about fundraising, understand it, will, don't have a problem talking about it, giving, and they're hiring a CEO that's has the same beliefs as they do, an understanding of the culture of philanthropy, so it works together. So you always are going to have, no matter who's in those positions, you're always going to have people that believe in the role of fundraising in that organization. Let's talk a little bit about telling your story. First of all, every nonprofit has a story to tell. And what I mean by that is you have a story about donors, how your organization started, why it was founded, and why it's so important to meet this need in the world. And that story of who you are, who you serve, and why people support you is important to tell every day.
But it's also about, you know, why the donor and why the organization and the person or cause served. Is, I mean, it's also about having that be of equal importance.
Right.
So, I mean, Jeff and I have been talking quite a bit about that recently in terms of making sure that the whole focus of the organization and the story of the organization includes the preeminence of those three entities or people, donor, organization, and the cause, or the person or the cause served.
Yep. So your story is about why you exist, why you're critical, crucial into the community, and why others support you. Everyone associated with your nonprofit has to know, understand, and believe that story and how to tell that story. It's important that every day that is being talked about. Also, you need to be very clear with everyone what your mission, vision, and values are, and that you include that in the language to your donors and clients and the cause that that's being served. This is really, really important. You have to be very clear so that everyone in that organization is aware of that. And then you have to tell that story over and over. It has to be ingrained, really, in your nonprofit's DNA.
And on that point, we actually suggest that whenever you have your regular staff meetings in the organization, that this is the thing that always is part of the staff meeting. Usually staff meetings kind of degrade into operations and policies and rules, and it actually really ought to start with a reminder of here's who we are, here's what we're trying to do, and then stories about donors, stories about the cause, stories about the person helped, which actually doing that has two functions. One, it reminds the staff, here's what we're about, don't forget that. And secondly, here's what we're trying to do, don't forget that. And thirdly, This is all very inspiring, so it lifts everybody's spirit and gets them above the drudgery of the day.
Yep. When people hear your story, we want them to be broken and moved to do something. And that means your president, the board, the staff, and your donors all need to own that story, know it, and that they've been broken and moved to do something great. Now, let's move on. So this whole thing about the culture of philanthropy, it's not just about leadership. It's not about the board. It's also everyone involved. So it's development. It's the program folks. It's leadership, board, and support staff. All of those people have to be involved to make this work in an organization. Now, Richard and I have seen massive distrust between development and program all the time in organizations. You know, we always hear these stories, well, from fundraising folks, well, the program people think we're just shysters, we're just trying to get money, we don't believe in what they're doing, we don't appreciate what they're doing, all we're doing is trying to get money. And then we hear from the program people, well, the fundraising folks never spend any time with us, they don't know what we're doing, and all they're doing is getting money, and they don't really know the real story.
Mm-hmm.
So you see this distrust so much between development and program. And what we're saying is we've got to bridge that gap. There's a lack of distrust basically because there's not good education going in between those two groups, and the communication is there's hardly any communication.
So yeah, so on that point, one of the things that we recommend is having a scheduled be spending time with program. So I mean, on a minimum, it ought to be once a month or even more frequently than that, where you're actually going to the program site, getting immersed in the program, getting to understand, being with the end clients or into the cause so that you get kind of immersed in the spirit of it, the technique of it, the process of it, and get your heart reengaged.
Yeah.
You've got to keep going back to that or you'll lose sight of
yeah.
it. And everybody needs to do that. Drag the IT guy down there.
That's right. So what can be done to build a culture of philanthropy with staff? Here's some ideas. First, in your hiring process, you must discuss the role of fundraising at the very beginning with a new employee. I don't care if it's the janitor or it's the CEO. This has to happen right at the very beginning of when you hire this person, even in the point of when you're interviewing people, that they understand what the role of development is and how you view donors in your organization. And you need to codify all of this in your employee handbook. And some of the things you'll be talking about in that handbook is thanking donors properly, talking to them on the phone, how that's done, the role of staff at an event, and the role of the board, so that when they're starting off with you, all of that stuff is already there. Everyone sees it. Everyone understands it. The other is to really start inviting donors to staff meetings. And we've seen this with organizations that do this. And it's another one of those things where, you know, we're a little jittery to do something like that. But when we invite donors to be a part of us, that allows staff to feel comfortable with donors and understand, hey, these are the people that make it happen. These people actually pay us. I mean, because of we get our paychecks because of these people.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is we really need to use program staff to, in our donor visits, use their expertise to talk with donors. A lot of major gift officers need to be, they're taking program staff with them to talk directly to donors. We need to see more of this happening so that program staff can appreciate the fundraising side of what their organization does. When we have seen this happen, when program people are in front of donors, they just have an amazing experience, and it completely changes how program views fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need to include donors in our organizational celebrations. You know, we have, during the course of the year, if your organization has different types of celebrations, galas, different things, our donors need to be a part of those things. And let's talk about not being afraid to talk about need. Richard, why don't you lead on this part?
Well, on this thing, what we've uncovered over the years that we've been working in the nonprofit sector is that this whole thing about talking about need, either the need of a person or the need, if you're into the environment or animal care or whatever, that we actually tend to talk more about process and the organization and the systems and all the internal stuff and not about need. And so what we're saying here is you really need to know the facts about the need so you can talk to donors about the need. You need to be able to describe the need in emotional and human terms versus technical terms. If you look at some of your collateral websites and all this kind of stuff, just analyze it. Now, is this really how I would see the need if I was actually there with the person that's in need or the environmental situation or whatever situation? Is this how I would think and feel about it? Are these words conveying that meaning? Often they don't, because if we were there personally, we would have an emotional reaction. We would have a human reaction to it. And we need to actually improve on describing the need in that regard. We also, I think, need to understand the causes of the need and have a very clear intellectual understanding of, well, what are the causes here? Now, the reason we go through this business about facts and causes and all that stuff is because oftentimes what we find out is that many fundraisers don't have a grasp of what is the need. Can you actually say mm-hmm. what it is? And then can you say what the cause is? And talk about it in a cogent and clear way. It's amazing how many people can't do that, so that's why we're addressing it here. The next thing is to control the political correctness and the technical jargon when describing the need. Now, this can be a real touchy subject. We had a client situation once where recently we had a big discussion about, well, we don't want to talk about our clients in such a way that they are pitied or that we demean them. And what we're saying, of course not. You need to ask for permission to share stories and share pictures and all that kind of stuff. But this whole business of political correctness has gotten so, in our judgment, so out of hand in some cases, that we actually shy away from the human experience of talking about the need and what we're trying to address in our nonprofits. I think the next thing is also to state what's going to happen if the need's not met. We could do a lot better job of talking about that. And that implies that, something will happen if the need's not met. In other words, if your organization isn't actually doing its job, then will something happen that's negative? Will there be a negative consequence? If there won't, then you probably have to bring into question, well, what's the point of your organization? And then that gets kind of ticklish as well. You have to have a clear grasp of why talking about need is so difficult. And we have a whole series of information on this whole point, but it boils down to that some of the difficulties we have as human beings talking about need can be summed up in these four points. We intellectually don't know the facts surrounding the need, so that's why we have difficulty. Or it's emotionally difficult to be close to the need. And in some writings that I did recently on this topic, I confessed that in my own journey, it's like if you get too close to hurt and pain and something that's not right, it's actually very hard on you as a person, so therefore you avoid it and you don't talk about it. So that could be a reason. Or we allow the PC police, the political correctness police, to govern our behavior versus we managing them. Or we really don't think a difference is going to be made, really, really, really. And in that case, again, then you've got to examine, well, why are you in that job? Why does the organization exist?
Mm-hmm. Good. All right, so what does this look like? Here's some ideas we've come up with to help you put into practice a culture of philanthropy in your own organization. First of all, every new staff or board member needs to be educated on the role the donor plays in the organization. It's just a must. So everyone involved has to understand what is a donor's role with your organization. All staff meetings really have to have a discussion about donors. We've talked about that. program folks understand that they'll work with development to meet, talk, and ask donors for gifts. So that's a priority, but it's also something that they know is going to be part of their job, that if they're out there in program, they also are going to be talking with donors and working with them.
Jeff, maybe going back up to all staff meetings, have discussions about donors. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it'd be good to also say, oh, we'll have discussions about donors as well as the need.
Well, yeah.
And so all staff
obviously.
Meetings will have discussions about donors, the need, and the story of the organization,
yep.
as we said earlier.
Yep, good. Development staff will work with program to understand what they do. So, you know, there's a development staff can be stuck in their cubes and their department and never get outside. They've got to get outside and see what program is doing. They need to get their hands dirty. Every organization has to have that as part of their culture, where development people are involved what's going on with program. And we really believe that over half of the president's time needs to be devoted to cultivating donors, either on-site or wherever the donor is. So getting out and meeting donors, talking to them, asking donors for help, getting in front of foundations, corporations that can all help the organization. They need to be out there working that. They're not stuck in their office just sitting there working on program stuff and making programs shine. That's great. They've got to be out there working on development and fundraising.
Now, this is an interesting point because if you actually were to say this to your chief executive and you said to her, listen, you know, you probably ought to spend – well, they'd probably push back and say, no, we can't do that. But if you went on the commercial side and you said to the chief executive, you know, you need to spend half of your time on market share, strategies related to market share, sales, marketing, and all that stuff. They'd say, oh, of course. Are you an idiot or what? Of course I got to do that. So they all understand it over there. Why we don't understand it over here is just, like, mind-boggling.
Yeah. Next, all board members are required to spend time working with program and the development staff. Board members need to have an understanding of what everyone does, and that includes development. A lot of times we see board members who are afraid to ask, afraid to even think about fundraising because they think it's scary or it's a necessary evil. And the way we get over that is to get them involved in showing them firsthand what you are doing and what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, even and on that point of the board members, I mean, anytime you encounter fear about asking, we think that in our experience it's mostly been surrounding a lack of understanding of how fundraising actually works. And so maybe with some of these board members or anybody on staff that has that fear, education. You have to have some education first about fundraising. Here's what's actually the transaction between the donor and the organization. Here's what's actually going on. It's actually not about the money at all. And when people actually understand that the transaction is caused by something greater than the money, that the money is actually a vehicle to transfer value, then they realize that, oh, I'm helping the donor do something they want to do. Well, who wouldn't want to do that? If you actually have a concept, if the board member has a concept that we're reaching into somebody's purse or wallet to grab some money, and that's what the whole game is, then we got a problem. And it's no wonder they have fear about it. So mostly it's a misunderstanding thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The organization creates multiple opportunities for their staff, the board, and donors to engage together during the year. So just like the board getting in front of development and program, we want multiple opportunities during the year where everyone can come together and engage and understand what each other does. The more opportunities we can create for that, the better it will be, the better the culture will solidify under philanthropy. And then finally, development staff is constantly communicating to the rest of the organization about how they're engaging donors.
Mm-hmm.
This is so important. And, you know, a lot of times we see development staff, they're doing their thing, they're so focused on their work, they forget to bring in the rest of the organization about what is going on. There's got to be ongoing communication with the rest of the staff of what's happening. So that's basically our presentation today, and we have some time here for some questions. And, Margaret, if you have any questions that we can hopefully answer, that'd be great.
Great. I just want to remind our audience that if you have any questions, you can use the Q&A tab to submit them, and we will try to get to as many as we can. I want to start off with a question that I think is probably on a lot of minds of people in nonprofit organizations when you're talking about a board. You may have some board members who don't want to fundraise or don't necessarily want to give money, but the argument for having them on the board is that they're connected or they have great ideas. And, you know, a nonprofit doesn't want to alienate that person or drop them off of the board. How do you – what do you do in a situation like that? Do you focus on that board member, try to change that board member's mind, or do you say, okay, we can't use you. We need to get somebody in here who is going to either raise or give money?
Well, boy, that's a touchy subject. It's interesting. In the same meeting that I was in yesterday, we were meeting with a bunch of advisory board members, and that the topic came up of now who's not participating, and what came out was, well, usually the people that aren't participating are the ones that aren't actually vested in the organization anyways. And, you know, we could get into a big debate about whether that's true or not. But if you actually follow the logic of that, is that if you are engaged in this great cause, then certainly you will follow that engagement with your personal financial involvement as well as being excited about asking others. So all that big monologue, Margaret, to basically say, find somebody that's actually going to be part of the full program? And that sounds mean, I know, but that's practical.
Okay. Along those same lines, we have a question from an attendee who wants to know, what is your view on employees donating to the organization, from the president down to the secretaries or, you know, as you said, the janitors?
Well, I think it's a great idea. I don't think it needs to be mandatory. But I think, you know, if you're part of an organization and you feel called to give to that organization, that's great. I have seen where some folks really do feel pressured to give.
Yeah, that's not good.
I don't think that's right. But, you know, if a person is involved in it and wants to give, I think that's a great idea. But to feel pressured or that it's part of the culture that you have to give to that organization, no, I don't agree with that. But I think as all of us need to give in general. So if you're not giving to your organization, I hope you're giving to other organizations.
Mm-hmm. How long have you seen it take for organizations, and this might be a tough question to answer, but is there a time frame for what it takes for an organization to change and focus on a culture of philanthropy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it does take time. It's, you know.
Years.
Yeah, it takes years. But, you know, obviously it will go a lot quicker if your leader embraces it from the very beginning or at some point says, we got to do this. But even so, that it does take a long time, and many times it's through attrition of people who've been in that organization and they leave, you know, that more and more people start accepting this culture of philanthropy. It's not easy for a lot of people. You know, people have been doing certain things the way they've been doing it for a long time, and it's hard for people to change. But we really feel like it has to change or folks are not going to be around for another 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It really has got to change.
Well, this is sort of the same argument that you get when you're talking about stepping into any sort of new fundraising strategy even. We just had this discussion about social media.
Yeah.
A lot of organizations are up against their leadership when they
yep.
say, we need to do this, we need to change this, or we need to try this, but we're not going to see an immediate increase in donations.
Right.
But five
right.
or 10 years down the line, we will. How do you deal with that? How do you get leadership buy-in when they're looking for, you know, money to come in right now based on everything that you're doing?
Well, we've been doing some. So on the point of we should have some economic advantage to behavior change, on that point, we have actually seen where we do have an economic advantage if you pay more attention to donors, that you can actually measure it in terms of attrition going down and giving going up. It's the same. From a purely psychological point of view, it's like in the commercial world. If you get paid attention to by your airline or your service organization or whatever organization you're buying and transacting business from, you will have an inclination to actually buy more, and so there's more transactions that occur. So I think there is an economic implication for actually a positive economic implication for adopting a culture of philanthropy.
Yeah, and as Richard said, we see this over and over because Richard and I work with nonprofits and on their major gift programs. And so we work with major gift officers all the time. And when we first look at major gift files, we see a ton of attrition. And when we start working with major gift officers to work with these donors, you know, face-to-face and getting in front of them and spending time, sending touch points and showing them that we care about them, we see revenue shoot up. We see retention rates increase. So the more that we've spent time with donors, the more revenue comes from it. It just naturally happens.
You've mentioned, both of you have mentioned a few times, talking about if you were in a retail business or, mm-hmm. A for-profit corporation, this is how you would look at it. This is what people would say. This is what people would do. And it makes a lot of sense. Do you think that there's a sort of a disconnect in the nonprofit sector when, where organizations might be thinking, well, we can't really compare our situation to the corporate world because that's not us? And do you think that's something real that organizations are dealing with or thinking about?
Well, no, the nonprofit world actually isn't thinking about that, which is why we're all obsessed with ratios and we're all obsessed with we're managing cost versus outcomes, and we don't have a proper view in many cases of what the role of resource development is in a nonprofit. So that's why, that's why we're dedicating ourselves to actually assemble some really sharp people in the commercial world to draw and to study it and to draw a parallel between the two worlds to actually showcase why they actually are the same. One is selling a product, one is selling a program, and people part with money for most of the same reasons. And so it's like we believe we can show how that all works together and why a different emphasis is needed like it is in the commercial world.
I guess the bottom line, Margaret, is when we can show that we care for that donor, we see great things happen. And just like companies that have focused on customers and good things happen, when nonprofits focus on their donors and really see them as half of their mission and use their time, we see donors responding in incredible ways. And if you really want to differentiate yourself as a nonprofit from your competition, spend time on your donors. Spend energy in thinking about your donors. It's the same in the for-profit world. The companies that have the edge are the ones that take the time to really think about their customers and the experience they're going to give them. We need to do the same thing in the nonprofit world.
We have time for one more question.
Okay.
I think it's going to be an interesting one.
Okay.
I'm just going to read it straight off the form. There's been some recent discussion about paying higher salaries for organization heads versus hiring people who are dedicated to a cause. What do you think about that?
Wow. Yeah, that's a ticklish one.
Servant
is worthy.
We have about 30 seconds. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, in general, we probably don't pay enough in nonprofits, and we sort of made that a virtue, and so then we get what we pay for, and then we're mad about that, and so that's sort of how we feel about it in general.
Yeah. But I would say, look, we want good people, but we want people who are passionate about our mission. You can be great at it. If you're not passionate about the mission, what good is that?
Yeah.
Same at the other side. You can be passionate about the mission, and nonprofits are usually focused that way, where they hire a lot of people who are passionate about the mission, but they're actually not technically good at the work. And we run into this all the time, and that's a huge problem in the nonprofit world. So it's got to be a good combination.
Yeah, so the hierarchy in terms of hiring ought to be passion, then passion, then technical competence, and then you get to the pay. And they all ought to work together. But I agree with Jeff. Without the passion, you could pay a person an enormous amount of money, and it'd be the wrong decision.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to cut you guys off. We've run out of time. Thank you so much. On behalf of Fundraising Success Magazine and Donut Perfect, I want to thank you again for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during the presentation, we encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. You can also visit the info booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. Please also check out the agenda for the rest of the day. We have more awesome sessions lined up. We encourage you to view as many of them as you can. And remember, if you can't watch them live, add them to your briefcase and view it at your convenience in the on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months starting on Monday. Have a great day, everyone, and thanks for joining us.